Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We are now in the fun month of December. Woohoo! And hopefully you are looking ahead towards the Christmas holidays and New Year's and not being too stressed out about it. And we're going to talk about that in our roundtable today. Need to give you a heads up, though, because for our shows on the 23rd and the 30th, the end of this month, we're going to actually do something different. We're going to do a best of two shows, Best of Boundless, the Boundless show this year. So hopefully you'll be excited about that. But the thing is, we need your participation. So I need you to check the blog. I'm going to write a blog post that is going to detail what we want from you. Basically, we want you to call in. We will provide all the info and give a 2-minute little snippet of what your favorite segment on the show was this year, or favorite moment. It could be funny. It could be something that impacted you. It could be something that was just memorable, or something that actually changed you and made you do something differently. So we will need to get your feedback on that. And then we're going to pull that clip and play it so everyone can hear it. So it can be the sacred or the profane. Hopefully not profane. Profane in the best sense of the word. But anyway, that'll be a fun couple shows that we will do as we finish out the year and head into the Christmas season. So heads up, look on the blog for that. As for the rest of the show, Candace is back this week for our inbox segment. She will be answering a question from someone on dating someone and having to discuss parenting styles, wanting to be on the same page on important things, including that, when you move into marriage. So yay for Candace being back by phone, you know, not in person, but we still love her even though she's on the phone. And then our culture segment this week, we have Craig Rochelle. Many of you who followed my little trek over to Catalyst know that he was one of the keynoters. He is a pastor from Oklahoma, and he's going to be talking about his book, Going All the Way. So you think that's provocative? Listen to the culture segment and you'll find out what it's about. But we are here in the studio today. I am joined by our own Sarah Kittle. Sarah, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Good to be here. Thanks
Great
for having me.
Great to have you back. Woohoo. Very fun. You're just like our holiday person now.
I come in for the holidays.
Talk about holidays. So that's fun. I always love having Sarah on the show. And then Andrew Hess. Welcome, Andrew.
Good to be here.
Andrew is a friend of ours from Focus as well. He currently works with our own Julie Slattery, psychologist here for Focus on the Family and parenting expert. And Andrew, just tell us what you do for Julie and all those in her sphere.
Yeah, I help produce and do research for the shows that she's working on, and also do some side research projects for her. So kind of anything she needs for any of the content creation that she's involved in, I get to be a part of. So it's a lot of fun.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, that's good. And we know we've had Julie here on the show before, and she's the author of many books, and we've highlighted them in the past. And Andrew is actually I called him now our resident pastor. So he finished his MDiv at Denver Seminary and is looking at a PhD program and working here at Focus in the meantime. So I'll make Andrew weigh in on things of spiritual import during this week, this week's roundtable. So
and no pressure.
Yeah. So let's talk about Christmas, you guys. We're on the front end of December. We've already started stressing out about what we can and can't fit in before Christmas actually hits. I was just talking to someone yesterday about the fact that we wish that there were a couple more weeks in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, because you kind of feel like you finish up one and then you're just like blazed away and get stuck with Christmas. And especially those of us that have to travel, we have to make sure we fit that in. So I was writing a list to myself, making sure I got my plane ticket booked, making sure I've started my shopping, which I have, but I'm still overwhelmed, and just kind of trying to fit everything in. So let's kick it off by just saying, what are the things for you that define Christmas that have to happen during the Christmas season, or it will not be Christmas for you?
Well, the things that make Christmas feel like Christmas is, you know, I mean, of course, Christmas is all about the birth of Jesus and his love and salvation that he's provided. And growing up, you know, we've always had the tradition of putting up a Christmas tree and having Christmas lights. I like to watch Christmas movies with my family and listen to Christmas music. And so usually, you know, I start doing my Christmas shopping pretty early. So I like to plan ahead, because you're talking about, you know, wishing there was more time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I thankfully have most of my Christmas shopping done already, even though, you know, it's just the beginning of December. And, you know, I actually this year did something different. I created a Christmas special for my web show, Soulcheck TV, with Cutlass and Hawk Nelson and Tim Scott from Travel the Road. And so I started planning that like way back in the spring because I'm like, I love Christmas, but for something like that, you have to do lots of planning. So I've already feel like I've been celebrating Christmas throughout the year. I had a Christmas tree up in October. So Christmas has been really stretched out this year, but I love it. So.
Yeah. And I went online and actually looked at your show. Throw out the URL for that so people know where
to find it. That's www.soulchecktv.com. So.
Soul, S-O-U-L.
Yes.
Check,
TV. So, okay. Yes.
That's very fun. Yeah, she interviewed those bands and got some good info out of them. It was pretty funny. I was checking it out. So very fun.
Yeah, they share some Christmas stories. And the one Christmas story is so unique. I'm sure dog lovers are crying when they hear it. But, you know.
Yeah. So what? Okay, you said you watch Christmas movies.
Yes.
What's the one that you have to watch?
Oh, we have so many now because there's so many that come out like on Hallmark and Gospel Music Channel. We love A Season for Miracles, which is a Hallmark movie.
One.
It's so good. It's about a lady who takes care of her niece and nephew when her sister goes to prison, and she's like hiding from the police because they want to put him in foster care, and there's an angel in it, and it's just so touching. So there's a new Christmas one I'm looking forward. I haven't seen it yet, but it's called Christmas with a capital C, and it's about a city in Alaska where they're standing up for what the true meaning of Christmas is. And I was born in Alaska, so I'm looking forward to watching that.
Oh, awesome. Okay, very cool. All right, Andrew, what about you?
Yeah, for me, Christmas is always the anticipation of getting to go home. I'm originally from Ohio, and so Christmas is one of the few times a year that I get to go home, maybe with family. And, you know, growing up, there was just so many, you know, great traditions. I have two brothers, and it's just always fun to anticipate getting to be home. And I think in some ways for me, Christmas doesn't really start until, you know, I get home and everybody's there, and we just kind of can enjoy catching up and spending time together. But we also, you know, grew up watching holiday films and having the music playing. My mom would always, and she has kind of this old boombox, but she'll always have her favorite, you know, whether it's Jim Brickman or I can't even remember, I think Celtic Women or something.
Oh, yeah.
She has all these Christmas albums that are just always playing constantly. Mm-hmm. So, and it's also fun to, a lot of times we'll decorate the tree together, things. My mom loves to save all different ornaments from when we were kids and things. So a lot of memories, and just it to me, it's a real nostalgic time, just remembering what it was like to be a kid and the excitement of the holiday. And my parents always, you know, even with the excitement of presents and things, it was always really important for us to spend time talking about Christ and the reason for the season. And just, you know, even I remember as a kid, we're so excited to rip into the presents. And, you know, mom would make us all sit down on the couch and we'd read the Christmas story. And I think half the time we didn't even hear what was being read because we were so excited about tearing into the presents.
It took 20 years for you to finally figure out what in the world was that about?
Yeah, it's okay, like, oh, okay. Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
I think in seminary at first I was like, oh, that's the story.
No, there you go.
Just kidding.
Watch out for those seminary students, people. Sometimes they're just thinking about their presents.
Okay. Yes.
Well, my mom is always very, loves getting her tree up, and she too has all the ornaments that represent different things that have gone on in her life or different landmarks or milestones or something like that. And so it's always fun to go home, and she'll usually like walk me through a bunch of them, you know, like, remember this ornament? And I always give her a hard time because she has this ornament that I made back in like, oh, I don't know, maybe second or third grade. And it's like this piece of burlap with this polyester Christmas tree on it that I put crayon like ornaments on. But it always ends up near the back of the tree because it's kind of ugly. So at least she's honest with me. She's like, it's up there, but it's just in the back.
Yep.
So
my mom has a tradition, and she gets each of my sisters and I an ornament each year. So it's kind of fun just to pull those out every year and get to look at them.
Oh, nice. Okay, now do you guys have Christmas music going, like in the car already? Have you already started playing it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Are you all year rounders or only post Halloween, or what happens?
Yeah, I just actually, just today, I think it's the last day of November, and I just started making a new playlist. Like ever since iTunes emerged, I just make a Christmas playlist for every year, and then like go into the old playlist and pull forward songs that I want to. But kind of making the Christmas playlist, you know, putting songs in there, and then sometimes getting some new ones that have just come out. But but yeah, and then throwing it on the iPod, and that's kind of the, but yeah, one station, I think it is like right after Halloween that they just start playing Christmas music nonstop. Mm-hmm. So
Okay, but some of it is just that crazy stuff that I'm so tired of hearing already. Like, if I hear one more rendition of Santa Baby, I'm just going to be, like, through the roof, okay? I can't even. It's so just breathy, and it just drives me nuts.
Well, we have some albums we pull out, you know, every year. I like, some old Michael W. Smith Christmas stuff and some new ones. He has new stuff, too, for that. Mm-hmm. Stephen Curtis Chapman, I love his song, O Come Emmanuel. Mm. We like the Andy Williams Christmas one, and we have a James Taylor one. And this year, there's been some new ones I've added. There's a new CD, O Come All Ye Faithful, and I just think it's one of the best CDs ever. There's a Chris Tomlin song on there. Huh. He sings O Holy Night, and I just love the way he does it. It just makes me just want to worship and get on my knees.
Yeah. So. That's awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate when the artists actually try to write a Christmas song. I mean, I know mm-hmm. sometimes a lot of those flop because of the nostalgia of, you know, these old classic songs that we've heard since we were, you know, walking mm-hmm. age. But I like it when there's a new song that comes out or somebody that, you know, is able to be creative and it's good, because it does seem like, you know, you can only have so many versions of, you know, O Holy Night on your iPod before it's like, oh, I really need his version or her version.
You do need
of
Chris
this.
Tomlin's version. It's
really
good.
Okay. Yeah. So,
okay. But well, and now some of those songs, you know, some of those original songs have become classics as well. Like, what would be a good example? Like, Mary Did You Know is a good example of one that came out and now it's been redone. Or, how do you pronounce it? On Newest Day, the Michael W. Smith one. Everyone, mm-hmm. you know, sings that now. So, that's pretty cool. I always pull out Evie's Christmas memories because it's very nostalgic for me, and I love Evie. And so she's always in my car, and the Selah one, too, I play that. And, of course, Amy Grant Christmas, several versions of that that you have to walk through as well. So, and I know some people are into, you know, some of the, like, the hardcore, like, hard rock ones now, groups that are doing that. So if you can do O Holy Night, you know, with a fierce backbeat, I guess that's good.
Well, I heard a new Christmas album that had some hard rock, kind of hard rock stuff, and it was kind of, not all the songs were like that, but there was one song on there, and I'm like, this sounds really scary. This doesn't sound like Christmas to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, totally.
They put the scary in Christmas.
Yeah. Do you guys have any, like, events coming up, like parties or concerts or anything that you know you're going to try to fit in? How do you decide, like, what you're going to go to and what you're not going to go to? Because I know between work and church parties and family and friends and stuff, it kind of gets a little bit overwhelming.
Well, so far I have not been invited to any Christmas parties. So.
Well, please invite Sarah to some of their parties.
Last year.
Some of our Boundless folks will invite you.
Oh, that's nice. I appreciate that. Well, last year, you know, I don't have any parties this year planned so far, but last year I went to one for a young adult group and they had a contest to be Miss Christmas or Mr. Christmas. So I was definitely going to that party. I'm like dressing up, it's Christmas. And so I went there and I dressed up kind of like in a sort of a Santa cute dress outfit, and my actual skirt was a Christmas tree skirt. Oh. The actual skirt you put around a Christmas tree. So I kind of begged people to vote for me, but I won Miss Christmas.
That is like shameless.
I won Miss Christmas, and that was a definite highlight. So if there's a party like that, I would definitely go to that again. Yeah. If there's one in my area.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We were getting together and watching a bunch of Christmas movies, like things like Elf and some of the more contemporary, I don't know if you can call them classics yet, but the movies that have been coming out that just kind of get you in that Christmas spirit. So we'll probably get a bunch of friends together to do that. And we have had parties in the past where we'll do boxes for Samaritan's Purse together. So we kind of use doing those boxes as an excuse and have everybody just bring stuff and we'll make up the boxes, but then also get to hang out and, you know, have music on and mm-hmm. things like that. So it's kind of fun. And then my church this year is doing a production of Scrooge. Mm. Well, they call it Scrooge, but it's Dickens' classic novel, mm-hmm. The Christmas Carol. And that's one of my favorite Christmas stories. I mean, mm-hmm. Dickens was brilliant in everything mm-hmm. he wrote, but I think The Christmas Carol is probably one of my favorite stories, just capturing the essence of Christmas. So, but yeah, it does seem like, you know, before you know it, it's, you know, Christmas is here, and it's like, there's so many things that you have to pick and choose. But I think I just look at, you know, the time that I have just trying to squeeze everything in, it seems like it always works out, but
try to make it happen.
Yeah,
I do that too. I realize one thing that I found is helpful is I will just take out a calendar. Like I'll take out some version, whether it's online or sometimes I've even written on a paper one December, and I just start fitting things in and trying to make it. Because otherwise, I'm like, whoa, did I say I would go to that? And what, you know, you don't want to just like pop in and make an appearance. That's kind of lame. So I try to figure out, you know, what I can fit in. And at church this year, we have the Messiah is happening, and we also are going as a group to the Festival of Lights parade downtown, which
oh,
is
nice.
Just fun and kind of kitschy, you know, all the lit floats. And I always go and critique the marching bands because I'm a marching band expert, let's be honest. So I always go there. But we have friends or people in our church who have a loft downtown, and so their balcony overlooks the parade route, and so they always invite us to come.
Nice.
And so that's super fun. And
so are you indoors when you watch the parade, or are you outdoors?
Well, you can be. So you can stand at their windows, or you can go out on their balcony, or sometimes for like a portion of it, I'll go down on the street and just kind of be part of the hubbub, especially if it's not too cold, you know. So some years it's been freezing cold, but so try to fit that in. And then I'm actually hosting our work Christmas party at my house this year, so that'll be interesting. So I did get my tree up. I have a real tree and I decorated it already. So I don't know if any of you saw my last year I had to do a little photo journal on Facebook about my experience getting my tree and getting it in the stand, and it was a lesson in reconciliation between my tree and myself. So maybe I'll have to post that again on my page, because it was kind of a humorous take on singleness and trying to put up a tree by yourself. Okay, so this year my friend Juliana, bless her heart, helped me get that tree in that stand, because it was crazy. So that was good. Speaking of, you know, things like Scrooge or the Messiah, we're using that at church like as an outreach for folks, for the opportunity to invite your friends and neighbors and stuff. And I know that's something we often focus on at Christmas. In fact, we're doing kind of with our young adult groups at church, something that our young adults pastor Doug has put together called Operation One Reach. And he's encouraging us all to pray for an unsaved friend now from now until Christmas, and find something during the course of that time, whether it's a church event to invite them to, or whether you just have them out for lunch or have them over for coffee or to a party, to just kind of put a focus on that. Anything you guys are doing in light of that? Or I know, Andrew, you mentioned the shoe boxes is something that you do throughout the season.
I'm not sure yet. I'm kind of spontaneous, so I don't have anything planned.
Because you're too worried about being Miss Christmas. So
maybe I'm a little too shallow. I have put together some shoe boxes in the past. So I know the first time I ever put together a shoe box was because my family and I went to a festival, and Josh McDowell was on stage, and he started talking about putting shoe boxes together, and he pointed to me out of everyone in the audience, and he's like, are you going to be doing a shoebox this year? So of course I nodded yes. And you know, that's how it starts. And I think, you know, Christmas is a time, and all year round, that's something that Christians should be doing, but it seems like even at Christmas more, it's a time to focus on what can you do to help other people, what can you do to reach out. And you know, I love getting gifts for people and blessing them that in that way, and it's really fun for me to give people presents. So, but as far as other things, I don't have anything like that planned yet, but it's still early.
Yeah, it's still early. Mm-hmm. I know I've done the Salvation Army bell ringing before. We do that Focus, you know, sometimes. And I signed up for a couple slots late at night one year with a friend of mine, and it too was freezing then. So we were standing there in front of Macy's, like ringing the little bell, and I was like, it's so freezing. So after a while, we took turns running into like the vestibule in between the store, like the doors, so we could like warm up, and then we'd come out back to the kettle. But that was really fun, and we would try to strike up conversations, you know, with people. And then we started singing like as many Christmas carols as we knew, and so that was kind of fun. And people would stop and like join with us, you know, for a while. So that was kind of cool to be a part of that. So we had fun. Did you guys ever do like advent calendars? Because I was going to go out and try to find an advent calendar too, you know, where you open up the little doors and stuff. Well, I remember that as a tradition when I was a kid.
I've never done that. I mean, we always...
Well, you need to do that now.
I know. Where do I get a good advent calendar?
I don't know, but you need to start talking. Well, maybe our Focus bookstore. I don't have one for this year. I'm going to go see if our bookstore has one. But
we might have had one when I was little. I know my grandma bought us like a wooden calendar that you use all year round, and then at December you put the little Christmas tree for the 25th. But and then we were in a flood on the Gulf of Mexico. Our whole house was flooded, and my grandma was like, "Did you save the calendar?" But that Christmas, my family of six, we spent it in a two-bedroom apartment, and it was just really special. So there's six of us in a two-bedroom apartment. We didn't have room for a big Christmas tree, so that year we had like a little, less than 3-foot Christmas tree, and so the things that make Christmas really important are love and just being together with family. And sometimes you can't do Christmas every year like you've done it before. And I know in this economy right now, a lot of people may feel like, oh, I can't spend the money on Christmas that I want to. But you can still have a wonderful Christmas remembering the things that are really important. And you can still do good for other people, even if it's not in financial ways.
Yeah. I think that's something that's really important, too, for young adults, especially for single young adults, is to remember. I mean, a lot of us have been in a situation there are lots of us out there who maybe are in a new job and we can't take time off at Christmas. And so you can't get home, or you know someone kind of in your church who's maybe lost someone this year. I think it's really valuable for us to remember, those who may be lonely during Christmas, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. if it's not on Christmas Day, but sometime leading up to Christmas when you can invite someone.
Right.
I mean, I know there are... like widows in the church. I told my mom, I want to do this with my mom this year, is just when I go home now before Christmas, have my mom invite her friends, like a lot of them who are widows or the older ladies in the church, or maybe someone who doesn't have family. And I'm going to do a lot of baking, maybe get my mom to help me, maybe not. Sometimes she just like sits there and tells me what to do, but that's okay. So bake some stuff and have her invite her friends over and have a little open house at her place, where I can kind of be the help, I'll be the waitress or whatever. And she can sit and talk with all her friends, and I'll kind of, pour coffee and cider and stuff like that. So I was thinking of doing that.
That's nice. This is really encouraging to be intentional and to start planning now. What can I do?
Yeah.
How can I reach out? How can I help somebody?
Yeah, because I think there are different things. It's just, again, it's kind of balancing that, getting caught up in all the stuff that we get caught up in, and then saying, okay, what do I need to stop and make sure that I make time for, because I want that to be important. And do something like that. It's a great time this year to just remember people who probably don't have, someone to spend Christmas with. And my friend Blythe, many of you remember her from when she and her husband Aaron were on the show a few weeks ago, has a blog, and she actually lost her folks when she was in college in a car accident. And so she always remembers at holidays, what it's like to not have that connection of family. And I know her siblings are kind of scattered throughout the world. And so she has to think of how to make Christmas meaningful. And of course, she has her little nuclear family now with her husband, but she's always great about inviting people like from within our church or within the community to their home for Thanksgiving. People who may not have anywhere else to go. And she just wrote a great blog post on this, actually kind of challenging her readers to remember those around them. And her blog actually can be found at hopejoyandgypsies.blogspot.com. And you can check out her post. It was kind of fun. So for her to talk about that and kind of challenge all of us in that. So I think that is kind of cool. Any tips that you guys have, like for Christmas, like when you talk to people about just ways that you kind of get things done, or ways that you make things happen? Or
I'm a big list person, so even now, like making lists of whether it's people that you want to reach out to or do something for, or just things that you need to get done, I find that it keeps me organized. I can pay attention to it, mark things off, and even things that you might not normally make lists about, like maybe important conversations you want to have or people that you want to make sure you connect with. Because it is easy, I think, like when the holidays come, you just kind of, you do a lot of things and, you go to movies and do all this stuff, but it is an opportunity to really connect with people and people that you might not see normally. So, so for me, making lists of people I want to connect with and, things that I want to ask people about, even if it's just a mental list, is helpful.
Yeah.
Well, I think, remember your parents at Christmas time. And I know sometimes, like my parents, both my grandpas have moved on, so neither of my parents have their father around. And so I think that can be hard for parents, not to have their earthly father around. So for me, I try to be generous with my parents at Christmas, because I'm like, who else is going to go all out for them if I don't, and my sisters. So I just encourage people, remember your parents. Be courteous. You know, I mean, I have a great relationship with my parents, but I know some people, you know, they maybe don't. So just try to be courteous. And even if you have a strained family relationship, just reach out and let them know you love them. Give them cards, give them presents, and just be sure to remember people at Christmas, just to let them know that they're loved and that you're thinking of them.
That's cool. Yeah, I know I always try to find ways, you know, to fit friends in and stuff. And one of the things I do is I'll sometimes just have a little open house at my place where I'll just make a couple different kinds of cookies, or I'll have just something really simple. And then, you know, cider, hot chocolate and coffee or something. And I say, when you're out shopping, you know, and you want a break, just drop by my house and come and grab a cup of hot chocolate, and then you can go out again, or, you know, stop by with the kids or whatever. So that's kind of a fun way just to make that connection point. Something else that also helped within the last few years, I've done something where I like, for wrapping gifts, I can't stand wrapping gifts. I cannot stand it. Okay. Like just physically wrapping the boxes and stuff. I love doing like bows and stuff. So what I've done is I bought like a few rolls of just solid color paper. So like brown paper, white paper, whatever kind of paper. And then I decorate it with fun bows. Or I'll go and like Walmart now has super cheap ornaments for like a dollar or two. And I'll tie an ornament on the box, you know, something that like relates to that person or something. So that's an easy way to gift wrap instead of like having multitudinous rolls of wrapping paper. What else have I done? There are a couple other things that I kind of do. Oh, like if you're going to throw a party, like last minute thing, a really easy decoration to do is just put a bowl with like ornaments on your table or something, or a bowl with oranges or limes or something is a great way to just dress up a table really quickly, or, you know, do something that's really fun, and obviously throw on some Christmas music. And I think you can get kind of festive quite quite quickly with that. So those are just kind of some time-saving tips I know that I've had. And it's always fun. I mean, just as long as you can make time for people, I think that's kind of the the most important. And spend some time. Like I said, I mean, I always used to or try to focus on, I get my little advent calendar. Maybe I can find one with chocolate. Those are the best. But spend some time, you know, just in God's word, reading the Christmas story, incorporating that, you know, spending time whenever I'm with my family, I always make them say stuff, you know, like, oh, what's meaningful to you this year? And or what's been great about your year this year? And I know that that's important as well.
Yeah. As far as gifts go, I mean, one year my family was so financially stressed that me and my sisters, we just were like, we're going to make my mom gifts. So we like sewed her these little like, you know, pillow hearts with little embroidered script. I did one where I did like a little pillow heart with embroidered scriptures and a little bird on it or something. And those gifts just touched her so much because she knew the financial situation. So well, so just for tips with giving gifts is you don't have to spend a lot of money. You can make something. And I know with me, you know, it's great if you can find the perfect gift for someone or if someone can find the perfect gift for you that you love. But oftentimes it's just the thought that counts. If someone gets me a gift and I don't really like it, I'm still touched by the fact that they even thought of me. So you don't have to spend a lot of money on gifts. You don't have to stress about finding the perfect thing, you know, to make somebody's life complete or something. You know, just just if you reach out in love, that's touching to someone. Even if it's a gift that, oh, yeah, it's nice. It's not, you know, my favorite, but it's touching.
Yeah. Totally. So
yeah, I've had some fun memories of times we do white elephant gifts, you know, and like get a group of people and, you know, we all bring silly stuff. And usually there's always like one or two gifts that kind of rise to the top that become the coveted gifts. And so everybody's going after those. And I remember a lot of times just laughing really hard about, you know, some of the things that get unwrapped and then, yeah, trying to be the one that doesn't get go home with something worse than you brought. But sometimes that's hard.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the... The goal is I want to go home with something that's more terrible than what I brought.
There you go. One of my friends actually did that. She brought one year, her dad went to Bible school with Tammy Faye Baker. And so he had one of her original albums, like, you know, with her face on it and just all the mascara. And so she brought that and it was a hot item. So very fun. Well, we will later this month, we're actually going to be talking about going home for the holidays and dealing with all the stressors that come with being around family. And do you open up the can of worms of just the, you know, the topic that no one wants to talk about? Do you try to settle, you know, your grievances against every family member over the Christmas dinner? And so that's going to be a fun show. So look for that in a couple of weeks. But thank you guys for weighing in on this.
You.
This was really a lot of
good
fun.
To be here.
I think it'll be helpful for people. I know it was for me. So great topic. All right. Thanks.
We bring an offering of worship to our King. No one deserves the praises that we sing. Jesus, may you receive the honor that you're
Hey everyone, for this week's culture segment, I'm very privileged to be joined on the phone by Craig Rochelle. Craig is the pastor of LifeChurch.tv, a senior pastor really, in Oklahoma, but it's actually a satellite campus that has a number of different churches. In fact, being, I guess, one of the largest congregations when you aggregate all of the different satellite campuses and the different people who take in their services each week. So Craig, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Hey Lisa, thank you so much. I'm honored to be with you.
Well, I was talking to you a little bit before and said that you could easily just slide in as one of our mentors or one of our spokespeople here at The Boundless Show, because we love people who love to get up in the faces of young adults and talk to them about relationships and marriage and about a biblical model for doing that. And so, in fact, I was listening to some other things that you've, some other interviews and stuff that you've done. And every time, you know, you'd say something, I was like, oh, there he goes. Good job, Craig. Good job. So,
Well, thanks. So
very excited about that, and excited about, we want to talk about a few themes here that are reflected in your book, Going All the Way, subtitle being Preparing for a Marriage That Goes the Distance. Now, we are all about this at The Boundless Show, just so you know. So very excited that there's another resource out related to this, especially from a pastor who is very, I would say, personally involved in the lives of young adults who are moving toward marriage, whether as a counselor or the guy who actually marries them, and certainly providing biblical guidance through preaching and teaching. So I want to just launch into our discussion by saying, because I saw you and heard you at Catalyst as well, and that was my first kind of in-person introduction to you. My question is, and here I was at Catalyst with 13,000 young adults and young adult leaders, and in conversations with some of them on the side, and hearing that, you know, just kind of some discouraging stories of these young adults who are talking about, whether it's small group leaders within their church, within their singles groups or whatever, and just people who are cohabiting, people who are not living by standards that are outlined in scripture, people mm-hmm. who are in this just malaise of like not understanding how their theology is going to match their reality. And I just want to throw it out. The first question is, why do the dating practices of the church mirror that of the world?
That's a great question, and I wish I could give you a good answer for it, but I think the broader question is why do the lives of people who call themselves Christians often mirror the lives of those that aren't Christians? And so when we talk about dating, I think one of the big reasons of many is that we don't highlight a lot of godly examples in the church. And you know, if you look at the way people are dating, even those who are really committed Christians, it's often just exactly like those who aren't. And it's really tragic, because if you do things like everyone else does, you'll probably end up with results like everyone else does. And the results we're seeing, even if you're not a Christian, you have to look at the results and say, you know, 50% of the marriage is ending in divorce. That's not good. Mm-hmm. Those are not good odds. And so kind of a logical way to look at it is, if we want something different when we're married, we probably need to do something different before we're married and leading into a godly marriage. And so that's really kind of the driving message of the book is, you know, if we do want something that is different and better, then we need a different strategy on the front end. And sadly, you know, so many people aren't taking a different approach to it on the front end.
Yeah. And you really did you were forced to live that out in your own life, because you were saved in college, right? You had your frat boy experience and kind of had your friends and what you had going on then. And then you met Christ and you're like, okay, I guess some things need to change. And you kind of did. The pendulum swung in the other way. And you said, here are some things that I need to do, including, I believe you took kind of a fast from dating to just get to know the Lord before you wanted to enter kind of the process of dating with more of a biblical perspective.
I did. Yeah, unfortunately, my parents weren't Christians, and they ended up divorcing. They are both now, but so I didn't have a good example at all. And I went into the college scene much like so many others, and got sucked into everything that's harmful and sinful. And my sin really drove me to a low point where, thankfully, I looked up and became a Christian. The problem was, I had so much baggage from dating relationships and kind of the, you know, the sexual stuff you can get drawn into, that I really felt like God was calling me to not date at all. And I took the majority of Saturday nights and turned those into what used to be a party night, turned it into what I called back then a date night with God. It's kind of cheesy, but it was really meaningful to me. And
we'll give you some grace for that.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. That was a long time ago. But I was getting off of drinking beer, and so I drank near beer, had my Bible, and then would listen to tapes. Some people don't know what tapes are, but they were cassette tapes, and read books on how to have a godly relationship. And really devoted that time to trying to renew my mind, to think differently. I wrote notes to the person who would one day be my wife then, and kind of expressed to her what I was doing and how I was trying to change. And that really became kind of a defining season for me to prepare for what we have now, which we consider to be a really different marriage. I just, you know, big cry of my heart is normal's not working in marriage. Is normal is mistrust, normal is a guy addicted to pornography, normal is affairs, normal is divorce, normal is staying married just for the kids. And so, you know, I really believe God wants us to have something that's different. And intimacy is not normal. Trust is not normal. Being married for 40 years is not normal. Having six kids like we have is not normal. Mm-hmm. But it is a blessing.
Yeah, and you say, I think really in the front end of the book, you say in describing the title, you say, when I say go all the way, I'm affirming God's plan for a marriage that goes all the way in sexual, emotional, and spiritual fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
So you were in that period of life, and you were growing spiritually, and ultimately, I know, and we'll talk about this later, you had a call to the ministry, and that's where you are today. But you were introduced to Amy, your wife, through another friend who I think you were supposed to be going out with or something. So that's kind of a... Now, when you first met Amy and you were told on the front end, okay, this girl is kind of crazy like you. She's kind of a Jesus freak, whatever. So how did you assess her from the get-go? Did you just say, okay, she's hot, I hope she's godly too, I'm going to have to figure this out? I mean, where did your decisions come from in that?
You know, the really cool thing is that I didn't see her, didn't know anything about her looks, and she didn't know anything about mine either. And her friend described her as being weird like me because she was overboard for God. And so that was the thing that really attracted me, because there were so many people who claimed to be Christians, but when it came to the way they lived, especially in their dating habits, it didn't resemble anything like the teachings of Scripture. And so they, you know, everybody made fun of her for being just kind of a weird Christian. So I called her, having never seen her, and we started developing a friendship over the phone long before we ever met. And that was really cool because it took the physical out of it, and it was just totally a friendship over the phone. And we talked for quite a while. Then when I did meet her, she actually was hot, which was not a bad thing. Uh-huh. From my perspective. But we started out totally different. We said we weren't going to kiss, and we're going to try to develop a friendship. And we did group dates rather than going out alone because of the temptations it would provide, and it ended up being a great thing. We kind of even described it as shifting gears. Once we realized we were spiritually compatible and we enjoyed each other, we said let's move and shift into second gear, which is let's talk about pursuing something that might lead toward marriage. And the great thing, Lisa, is we had other couples that worked with us and helped counsel us through. Which I'm a big believer in, is just, you know, go find the best Christian marriage you can and invite them to help lead you on a direction that's different than those that don't.
Yeah. I like how you also say, you know, to put some time and some effort into that courtship phase, that dating phase, make sure you're asking the right questions. But then when you get to engagement, just get it done, because you don't need to be having any roadblocks. And,
yeah,
you know.
Longer courtship, shorter engagement. Once you plan to get married, man, get it going.
Yeah.
And get on that honeymoon fast.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what would you see, because you are a pastor, what is, and I know you're a big advocate of marriage counseling, and, mm-hmm. you know, here at Boundless, we are too. In fact, we even tell people sometimes do that pre-engagement counseling and get all that
Absolutely.
Out on the table before yep. you're buying cakes and dresses. What is the biggest concern that you see crop up in marriage counseling? People who are committed saying that they want to get married, but you're like, whoa, here's some things you need to look at.
Well, in the Christian circles, the thing that a lot of times people say, you know, we're not really getting along, but we're getting married on faith. And I think that's just one of the stupidest things ever. You know, because what's a small problem when you're dating could be a really large problem in marriage. The other thing I see a lot of, and this is sad, but I just see a lot of people compromising, especially when it comes to sexual standards in Scripture. And so we just make a policy at our church that, you know, if you're living together or you're having sex together, we won't marry you. That makes people really mad a lot of times. But on the more positive side, a lot of times they are convicted that what we're doing is not right. And kind of the big thing that makes sense to a lot of people, what I try to say is, you know, when basically if you're living together or you're staying the night with each other or you're having sex, you're doing things that are reserved for marriage. And that's why it's so hard when you break up, because you kind of were playing marriage, and then in a real sense you practiced divorce. And once you've done that with, you know, 3 people or 8 people or 17 people, like, you know, most have, you've pretty much practiced marriage and practiced divorce over and over again. So therefore, when you do get married and things go bad, you go back to what you've been trained to do, which is, well, we just divorce. So instead, we're trying to really say there are certain things that are reserved for marriage. Let's leave them there. That's why the covenant is in place. This is a marriage covenant. It's not a contract. And we're really trying to help people see that. And that's the other end, is the difference between a covenant and a contract. In our world today, people have a contract mind with marriage, which basically means this is here to protect me. I'm in as far as you're in. We'll meet 50-50 in a covenant. Instead is, you know, I'm in 100% no matter what. This is till death do us part, not until you make me angry and don't do what I like or I'm not happy. Hmm. So those are some big things that we see over and over and over again in working with people hoping to get married.
Yeah. Now, what about singles within your sphere? Because we have a lot of folks at Boundless here, and mm-hmm. I, you know, put myself in this camp of someone who didn't actively prepare for marriage in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I was kind of told that, you know, well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And so mm-hmm. just quote unquote, serve the Lord and do whatever. And, you know, so I did. And then I went out and built my career and kind of was busy in that. What about the singles who, especially women, where there's a lot of hurt because maybe they're not being pursued or they're not mm-hmm. seeing their dream, a desire that they feel God gave them to have marriage and a family. And they're kind of languishing in the churches, wondering if it'll ever be a part of their story. And maybe men who are out and are, you know, asking girls out and are being systematically rejected. Where's the place for them within this framework?
You know, that's so painful, and, you know, like I've got a handful of just incredible godly girls on staff here that are in their 30s and haven't had any guy pursue them forever. And I just want to scream at the guys, pull your head out, wake up. These are great women, you know, get to know them. But I do think, you know, sometimes I think that there's almost a detachment from relationships sometimes when people say, I'm just serving, I'm just building my career. I just really, really encourage those, both men and women, to stay really involved in the relational life of the church as well, both with, you know, people of the opposite sex and then with different age groups. And I'd also say to someone in that place, don't compromise and lower your standards. Just because someone hasn't come along doesn't mean that God doesn't have really someone super, super special for you. And sadly, I think sometimes when the clock is ticking, someone will lower their standards and say, well, this guy's alive, he's breathing, and he has a part-time job, so I'll take him. And in a sense, that's kind of really an insult to God, saying, God, I don't think you can bring someone that really is the right person for me. So I would just say to that person, you know, I understand that's difficult. Don't give up. Have hope.
Yeah. And we pretty systematically here at Boundless, you know, shoot down the notion of the one, that there's going to be some mystical experience and, you know, you have to, the stars have to align and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, we don't want young adults, especially those who are believers and are living biblically, to go in the other direction and say, okay, well, definitely XYZ are major concerns, but maybe, you know, like you said, just go on faith, just, you know. And I've seen women especially, and I think this speaks to your point about emotional involvement and attachment and playing at marriage, who get way emotionally involved in a relationship, and then the very real considerations that need to be made just start falling by the wayside. There's just
Yeah, it's very true. You get blinded by the romanticized version of what could be, and then you stop dealing with reality.
Yeah. So what's been the response from the young adults, the singles that you know, Craig, to the book, that those of that have read it so far?
You know, it's interesting. I'm so thankful. Some people jokingly refer to it as their dating Bible or whatever, but it's you know, the best compliments I have would be someone who read it 2 years ago and says, I'm in my 6 months of marriage now. We followed this, we did it, and God is blessing us. And so it's what's interesting to me is so many times the churches, it seems like, will soften a message and not preach the high standards of God. But what I'm finding is the younger generation really wants someone to challenge them and say, here's some really radical different ways to approach this, and you can have a very different result if you do. And so there's a lot of people that are just doing stuff that most people think is crazy, like not kissing until they're married and all sorts of really wild stuff that's different. But we're seeing just great results. A lot of people really excited, sharing the book with their friends. And there are actually a lot of people that are coming to Christ from the book because they, they're hurting from a bad relationship and a friend gives it to them. So it's been a tool to reach people as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, and your own testimony is very powerful in that, about how God really did change your life and, you know, brought you and Amy together. And in the midst of that, you've been able to grow and serve together. So that's cool. And I really like how, just what you said, the practical application of the book is, it gives some very stark recommendations for how people can do it differently. And you're not, apologetic about doing that. So I like it, you know, not walking the line there and just kind of saying some hard things that need to be said, because I think we need some standards set in that. So,
well, thank you.
Awesome. The book is Going All the Way, Preparing for a Marriage That Goes the Distance. And this is Craig Groeschel. Like I said, he is a pastor at lifechurch.tv. You can find more info about his church and about him right there. And do check a copy of this book. Read it with a group of friends and discuss it. And we always like to point people to good resources that are out there when they come out. So thanks so much, Craig, for being part of this discussion.
Yeah, Lisa, thanks again.
He's the Savior we have been praying for. In our humble heart, He will dwell. God is in us, God is for us, God is with us, Emmanuel.
Well, hey, everyone, we're opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Candace!
Lisa, we're not even in the same time zone anymore.
I know. It's kind of sad, but also great. So,
well, it is good to be back.
Good to talk to you, and I'm sure everyone is excited to hear your voice. So,
aww.
And to have you weighing in. We have all these just relationship questions stacking up that you have to tackle, because I was like, we have to wait for Candace. I know, exactly. So, well, we're gonna tackle this one today. So I'm very excited about it. This girl writes in and she says, I'm a 22-year-old Christian woman who's been in a long-distance relationship for several months. We're both marriage-minded and have had serious discussions about things that would make or break the relationship. Since we want kids, one thing that we think is important is to have similar parenting styles. The problem is that neither of us really knows what our parenting styles are. Maybe it's impossible to know until you're a parent. Do you have any advice?
Well, I just want to start by saying that it is impossible to know until you have the babies. Because you remember all those times you said, when I have kids, my kids will never do that at Target, and I will be excellent in this way. And I mean, you just laugh after you have kids because you realize your kids do exactly that in Target right at the worst possible moment. And all the things you thought you knew, you realize it's just totally different on the other side. Now, that said, I think it's great that you and your, sounds like soon-to-be fiancé are really on the same page in terms of wanting kids. That's the most important first step. And so you just need to apply that principle of oneness to studying, you know, what will it look like to have kids? And I think two things come to mind. Read some books about parenting and talk about them. You know, ask around to find out who are the people you really respect, who are the parents that you observe and say they do it well. Ask them who they've looked to. And read those books and just, you know, go out for coffee and talk about what you read there. And then spend some time with parents of little kids and observe how they parent. And then, you know, come away from that and just talk and say, hey, well, what did you think about how they handled that temper tantrum? And, you know, how did you feel about the way they did bedtime routines? You know, would we pray like that every night? Would we do something different? The other thing is to talk about how your parents did it. And what you liked about how you grew up and what maybe you didn't like that you'd want to change. And just have some conversations to you know, it's always going to be theoretical until you have the babies, but that's okay. Go ahead and start having those conversations.
Yeah. I think it's cool to look. One of the things I've noticed is when I look at the families where I'm just like, how in the world are their kids so well behaved? And I've actually started talking to them about that, you know, and just asking. And I remember one family where I was just really impressed by their kids. They said that they do practice runs, like they don't wait until they don't wait until there's a crisis or there's a tantrum or whatever. But they practice, like they have a number of kids. And so they practice Sunday mornings, for example, because that's kind of a stress time in their house,
right,
of getting out the door to church. And then they practice bedtime. And I was like, that is so savvy to come up with that and do that kind of thing.
Yeah, it really does work. We had a little bit of a opportunity to do that moving to Kentucky. At Lisa, we were talking before we went on air about Steve and I talking to our kids about what to do when they meet a new adult. Because, you know, their tendency would be to look at their shoes and just kind of mumble and not really engage. And, of course, that's horrifying to the parents because how embarrassing. So we actually had dry runs, practiced saying, okay, hi, little Churchill, it's so good to meet you. And, you know, sticking the hand out and teaching them which hand to shake with and say, now look in my eyes and say, it's nice to meet you. And, you know, give me a firm handshake. And they really, it's almost like a game for them. They really enjoyed that. And we actually did it the day before we came down to Kentucky. And within hours of being here, you know, sure enough, we're meeting new people and the adults are looking at the kids and wanting to shake their hand. And I mean, Steve and I were kind of, you know, wiping the, whew, doing the, you know, the sweat from our brow thinking, thank you, Lord, that we thought to practice because the kids remembered it. And so, yeah, I think that really is a very wise strategy for helping your kids, preparing them for what they're going to encounter.
Yeah. And I think just quickly before we wrap up here, one thing that came to mind, I think you're right in saying, you know, you can't really gauge, you know, how you're going to react in a situation when you are a parent. A lot of it is sink or swim. But what if you're in a relationship and you are, you know, definitely a spanking is going to happen and you're dating someone who's like, how do you,
right,
what do you
right.
do?
Well, that brings up an interesting point. I remember now that when Steve and I were dating, I actually, it's kind of an awkward conversation. I said, how did your parents discipline you? You know, he said, oh, well, you know, they did this and that. And I said, well, did they spank you? Oh, yeah, I think I got a couple of spankings. Well, what did they spank you with? I mean, I really wanted details. You know, did your dad take his belt off and, you know, whip you in front of everybody? Or did he take you to a private room and have a conversation and a prayer? And, you know, did he use his hand? I mean, I really wanted to know all the details of how were you disciplined. And I was, of course, willing to share how I was disciplined. It was really important to know what was your experience. And I think that's such an important starting point because if somebody is really opposed to spanking, it may be because they were spanked in anger or by parents who didn't walk through that process in a biblical and loving way. Mm. And so it's understandable why they'd be gun-shy about that.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So. Well, good thoughts, Candace. Great to have you back. As always, all of you out there, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org with your questions or your comments on this question, because we want to hear everyone weigh in on that. And hopefully this will be helpful for you either now or down the road when we talk about stuff specifically like this. So that is it for this week's show. Don't forget to check out the blog this week as we talk about our best of shows coming up at the end of this month, where we're going to review and get comments from you as to your favorite moments on the Boundless show throughout 2010 and play the clips that correspond to those. So this is going to be your opportunity to speak up. So check out the blog for details about calling in, and hopefully we will hear from you. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.